from the Radio Ranch in beautiful Sugar Land, Texas, where life truly is sweeter. It's the Bombastic Blogcast for Wednesday, January 3rd, 2024. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
You hear yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, and one heck of a nice guy. Let's get started with
the Daily Denogram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. This is a simple, short one here. It just says, art is work. To sell it is art. Yeah. And to buy art is a show of faith.
Just smile and wave, boys. Smile and wave.
Now, pardon me as I move along with all the confidence of a sleepwalker to the so-called educational part of the blogcast.
Twisted History.
This is it.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
Be sure.
Some cool, some not so cool. Just the same, you need to know your Twisted History.
Yes, you do.
You might be quizzed.
See? All right, kids, it was on this day in 1870, construction began on the Brooklyn Bridge. Opened 13 years later, too, to a lot of fanfare, lots of fireworks, politicians made speeches, all of which have long since been forgotten. But the best part is, there's no toll to cross. Imagine that. And it was on this day in 1944, World War II flying ace Major Greg Pappy Boyington was shot down in his Vought F-4U Corsair by Captain Masahiro Kawato, flying a Mitsubishi A6M0. But it only made Major Boyington mad. Oh yeah, Boyington survived to fight some more, lived until 1988. And to this very day, still considered to be one of America's finest.
Good man.
It's kind of hard not to love Dave Chappelle. I mean, the man is clearly one of the greatest comedic talents alive. Probably one of the greatest of our time. I would put him right up there alongside George Carlin. George Carlin and Dave Chappelle have a lot in common in terms of the type of comedy they do. And, of course, Carlin. How long has Carlin been gone now? More than 10 years, I think. Maybe even longer. But Dave Chappelle, truly one of the greatest comics of our time. And he just recently doubled down on his, does he have another Netflix special, I think it is? Anyhow, yeah, it's a new Netflix special titled The Dreamer. And it's already on Netflix because I saw the trailer for it the other night. I've got to watch this. He's just so gifted. Now, you take a thorny topic like transgenderism. He has said a few things that has totally pissed off the transgender community, what I call the gender freaks. You say, I have nothing against people who are gay. If you're gay, that's fine. I don't care. And I've had a lot of gay friends in my lifetime. Class acts, great people. I have a friend right now who's gay. And he's got several Emmys to his name. And he is a class act all the way. Those aren't the people I have a problem with. I have a problem with the people who want to flaunt it all and flaunt aberrant behavior, aberrant transgender behavior. And they want to flaunt it in front of children. You know, I got nothing against a gay pride parade. Just keep it in a small area, don't be marching up and down my street, because you don't see me marching up and down the street saying, I'm hetero, I'm special because I'm hetero. I mean, it's just insane. So, in the recent past, Dave Chappelle has said some things about transgender people that has rubbed that community the wrong way. And let's not forget, that community represents a very, very, very small portion of the nation's total population. But on this new special, The Dreamer, on Netflix, Chappelle opened up about an opportunity he had back in the day to meet fellow comedian Jim Carrey, with the catch being that Carrey would go on to introduce himself as yet another comedian, Andy Kaufman, while filming Man on the Moon. Here's how Dave told it.
And the only thing that got me out of that space was a comedian friend of mine, the late, great Norm MacDonald. That's right. Shout out to Norm. And what Norm did, which I'll never forget, is he knew that I was the biggest Jim Carrey fan in the world. Now, I'm not going to go all into it, but Jim Carrey is talented in a way that you can't practice or rehearse. What a God-given talent. I was fascinated with him. And Norm knew that. And he called me up and he goes, Dave, he says, I'm doing a movie with Jim Carrey. Do you want to meet him? And I said, yes, I do. And it was the first time I could remember since my father died being excited. And the movie was called Man on the Moon. I didn't know any of this. And in this movie, Jim Carrey was playing another comedian I admired, the late, great Andy Kaufman. Yes, and Jim Carrey was so immersed in that role that from the moment he woke up to the time he went to bed at night, he would live his life as Andy Kaufman. I didn't know that. When they said cut, this nigga was still Andy Kaufman. So much so that everybody on the crew called him Andy. I didn't know any of that. I just went there to meet him, and when he walked into the room where we were supposed to meet, I screamed, Jim Carrey! And everyone said, no! Call him Andy. And I didn't understand. And then he came over and he was acting weird. I didn't know he was acting like Andy Kaufman. Just like, hey, how you doing? And I was like, hello. Andy? Now, in hindsight, how lucky am I that I got to see one of the greatest artists of my time immersed in one of his most challenging processes ever. I'm very lucky to have seen that. But as it was happening, I was very disappointed. Because I wanted to meet Jim Carrey, and I had to pretend this nigga was Andy Kaufman all afternoon. And he was clearly Jim Carrey. I could look at him and I could see he was Jim Carrey. Anyway, I say all that to say, that's how trans people make me feel.
You notice if you really look closely at the Dave Chappelle situation right now, where they've tried to cancel him, but they couldn't. And I'll tell you why. Because Dave Chappelle tells the truth. He has that added gift of being able to tell the truth. And after he's told it, it's very funny. Very funny. It's like I said a minute ago. I mean, it's hard not to love Dave Chappelle. Truly one of the greatest comedians in the world. And what he does is he gets on stage and he tells you what is wrong about us. What's dysfunctional about us. He holds up a mirror to us and shows us what freaks we humans are. And that's all he does. He doesn't demonize us. He doesn't try to cancel us. He just says, look, this is what's going on. This is who you are. And this is how I look at it. This is why it strikes me as being funny. And that's a gift. And the thing I noticed, too, about these people who are so vehemently transgenderist, you know, especially these idiots who say that there are, what, 120 different genders? No, there's only two genders. And if you don't like that, that's too bad. You got the problem. I don't. You're born either male or female, period. Dave Chappelle would be one of the first to tell you about that, but he'd be able to tell it to you in a way that would make you laugh. I don't have that gift. Wish I did. I'd be doing stand-up right now somewhere. I'd be on the stand-up comedy circuit. But instead, I while away my life in this comfortable studio. Very comfortable studio. But people have tried to cancel Chappelle, can't do it because of his honesty. And as I think about that concept, the fact that he is so honest, thought, gee, what if our government could do that? As you may already have heard, Texas just passed a bill, in fact, it's becoming a law here any day now, that gives local law enforcement and regional and state law enforcement the power to arrest and deport illegal aliens. Pretty bold move. And needless to say, it's created a lot of controversy. The Biden administration, for instance, has issued a stern warning to Texas. Of course, they're always doing that. And the administration has threatened legal action if Texas proceeds with the enforcement of this law. Well, There's no way that Texas isn't going to proceed. And Governor Abbott, who is a staunch advocate for stringent immigration controls, signed the bill into law on December 18th. It's known as SB 4. And it's a pretty important departure from previous policies as it bypasses federal channels. Now, this is what has the ire of the administration. But it allows Texas law enforcement to directly address the issue of illegal border crossings, which we should be allowed to do. I mean, we are a sovereign state within a sovereign nation. So who's on the wrong side of things here? Governor Abbott or President Biden? And, of course, the surrogate president, Barack Obama. Now, the Justice Department's response came in the form of a letter sent directly to Abbott on December 28th, which was last Thursday, demanding assurances by January 3rd that Texas would hold off on enforcing the new law. So that would be today. The federal government's position is that SB 4 criminalizes actions already deemed illegal, potentially damages diplomatic relations with Mexico, like we're really worried about that, and interferes with the enforcement of federal immigration law. So there you have it. Well, let's look at the numbers. December saw record-breaking numbers of migrant crossings, with a seven-day average surpassing 9,600. Not 96,000, 9,600. It's still a big number. This surge has put an immense strain on border security, and it's fueled the debate on immigration policy, of course. Governor Abbott argued that his bill could reduce illegal entries by up to 75%. Now, where he got that number from, I don't know. But that's not insignificant. And this is a claim that underscores the urgency that he feels in addressing the situation as winter crossings continue to escalate. Now, critics of the Biden administration's threat to sue Texas argue that the federal government's failed to effectively manage the border crisis, leaving states like Texas, we could include Arizona. You don't hear much about New Mexico. But anyhow, it leaves these border states to bear the brunt of the consequences. So they contend that SB 4 is necessary. It's a necessary measure to ensure the safety and security of Texans, and that the state of Texas is within its rights to enforce its own laws when federal policies fall short. I find it very difficult to argue with that logic, don't you? But legal challenges to SB 4 have already started. You got Democrats in El Paso County and two immigration rights groups filing lawsuits against the bill. You know, challenges to the bill from within our own state. They're asserting that the law is unconstitutional. And they argue that it usurps the exclusive authority of federal agencies to conduct arrests, detentions, and deportations. However, I would argue that that is not exclusive to the federal government. They also allege that the law could lead to racial profiling of Hispanic citizens. Really? Apparently, they have been living under a rock for some time now, because the vast majority of critics of this open border are Hispanics, or as I refer to them, Tex-Spanics. They're people of Hispanic descent, but they're lifelong Texas-born citizens of the United States and Texas. You should hear them. Talk to the Hispanic people of Texas. So as the deadline set by the Justice Department looms, I guess it would be fair to say the nation's watching closely to see how this clash between state and federal powers is going to unfold. The outcome of this dispute could have some far-reaching implications for immigration policy and the balance of power between state governments and the federal government. I promise you this, it won't be resolved before the election. It won't. I guarantee you this. And then after we get our man back into the White House, the issue will be somewhat moot. But no matter how you look at it, you have both sides standing pretty firm in their positions. You got the lefties over here, they're not going to budge. You have the righties over here, they're not going to budge. And people in the middle don't seem to have much of a voice at all. So the stage is set for a legal showdown that could redefine the landscape of immigration enforcement in the United States. It does need redefinition. We just need to be very careful how it's redefined. You won't believe who got swatted over the weekend. Happened on Saturday. George Soros. Seriously. I was stunned. All right, now, you understand what swatting is, right? That's where some anonymous caller calls 911 and sends a SWAT team to a location claiming there was a shooting. And this has happened to quite a few people. This time around, let's see, it happened to MTG down there in Georgia. It's happened to her a couple of times. But police got a 911 call at 9 p.m. Saturday, Eastern Time, with the person claiming that he was shot and was going to kill himself, just shot his wife, is what they claimed, and was going to kill himself. And, of course, it was a false call. Now, here's how Fox News reported it. The Southampton Village, New York, estate of George Soros was reportedly swatted on Saturday, adding the left-wing billionaire to a list of other high-profile people who've become victims of the 911 prank over the past couple of weeks. The New York Post reported that the Southampton Village Police Department received a 911 call just before 9 p.m. on Saturday from a person who claimed that he shot his wife and threatened to kill himself at the mansion on Old Town Road. Officers rushed to the scene, but the call turned out to be false, according to Southampton Village Detective Sergeant Herman Lamison, per the Post's report. Southampton Village Police, including Lamison, didn't immediately respond to inquiries from Fox News Digital on the matter. Numerous lawmakers and public figures have been swatted over the past few weeks. All true. Now, let's go to the New York Post. The way they reported on it, on Friday, police in Virginia responded to the home of George Washington University legal scholar Jonathan Turley after a bogus 911 call to Fairfax County Police that someone had been shot at the address. On Christmas Day, police were dispatched to the home of Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene following a fake 911 call from a man who said he shot his girlfriend there. Four other Georgia lawmakers, listen to this, this is where it gets interesting. Republican State Senators John Albers, Kay Kirkpatrick, and Clint Dixon, and Democrat Kim Jackson were swatted the same day, according to reports. Another victim of the Christmas Day pranks was upstate New York GOP Representative Brandon Williams. On Thursday, Georgia GOP Lieutenant Governor Burt Jones was also swatted with a bogus bomb threat called into the police one day after U.S. Representative Rick Scott, Republican out of Florida, was the target of another call that sent police rushing to his Naples home. Now, among the other recent swatting victims were Boston Mayor Michelle Wu, a Democrat, and U.S. Representative Kevin Miller, an Ohio Republican. So, what's the pattern here? They're hitting both Republicans and Democrats. They're hitting people who have widely divergent views on political issues. Who's doing this? Why are they doing it? What is the motivation behind it? Now, one theory I have is that they're doing this as a diversionary move to keep law enforcement busy while someone perpetrates a crime somewhere else in the same location or the same general location. But that doesn't seem to be the case here. There are no reports of that. There's just this swatting going on, and somebody, God only knows who, is picking on random people, regardless of their political affiliation. I'm just glad to see that George Soros got swatted. But, you know, really, it's a sick thing to do. And what law enforcement needs to do now is to find, through electronic surveillance, high-tech electronic surveillance, who's doing this. Where are these calls coming from? Because you can trace these calls. Of course, they're probably made from a cell phone, so you can get the information from these cell towers that you see all over the place. I mean, a phone number certainly must be recorded by the dispatcher when the call comes in, right? Caller ID? Find out who's making these calls. Arrest them and interrogate them. Keep them in solitary if you have to, until you get answers as to why they're doing this. But there doesn't seem to be a pattern, other than the fact that Georgia gets hit a lot. Do you see all those names from the state of Georgia? What in the world is going on down there? Started with Marjorie Taylor Greene, and then John Albers, Kay Kirkpatrick, Clint Dixon, Kim Jackson, all swatted on the same day. This is really bizarre. And I think we're approaching the point where it's starting to get out of hand. The other day I expressed my, my surprise. I wasn't exactly stunned. Yeah, I was stunned. Okay. At Ohio Governor Mike DeWine. He's a Republican. Seems to be a pretty level-headed fellow, but he vetoed a bill blocking protecting minors and girls' sports. Well, turns out that he took $40,000 from pro-trans hospitals. All right, back on Friday, DeWine vetoed this House Bill 68, which sought to prohibit gender-affirming care for minors and to restrict transgender athletes' participation in girls' and women's sports. Yeah, I was kind of stunned at that. And I thought, well, now why in the world did he do that? I mean, this guy's a conservative, and he's presiding over what is now a red state, solidly a red state. Some political observers still regard Ohio as a swing state, but no, they've gotten pretty conservative. I mean, how many years, how many decades do you have to live under Rust Belt conditions before you finally switch sides, right? So anyhow, House Bill 68 proposed to ban physicians from providing gender-affirming care. You know, stuff like puberty blockers and hormone therapy to trans youth. It would also prohibit gender reassignment surgeries for minors. And then it also, as an added measure, sought to bar transgender girls from competing in female sports categories, which I thought was an important thing. Because if you're going to look at things realistically, if we're going to be honest about this, girls in school are getting clobbered by this insanity. So Governor DeWine told reporters that the ban would do more harm than good. Really? What in the hell are you talking about? So to quote him, this was at a press conference on Friday. He said, "These are truly complex issues, and reasonable people draw vastly different conclusions." That sounds like a smokescreen to me. You know, the old, leave it to us, you're not intelligent enough to figure this out for yourself. That's kind of what that smacks of. He says, "This bill would impact a very small number of Ohio's children, but for those children who face gender dysphoria, and for their families, the consequences of this could not be more profound." Yeah, smoke and mirrors. And he further claimed that parents of transgender children told him that their kids would have committed suicide without sex change procedures. Well, have you looked into the veracity of the parents? Not all parents are of sound mind, you know. And then he says, "Ultimately, I believe this is about protecting human life. Many parents have told me that their child would not have survived, would be dead today, if they had not received the treatment they received from one of Ohio's children's hospitals. I've also been told by those who are now grown adults that, but for this care, they would have taken their lives when they were teenagers." Again, I think that's smoke and mirrors. What about psychiatric care? If your child appears to be gender dysphoric, how about psychiatric care? Why not go there first? So, the Federalist Papers, good publication, Now reports that it appears DeWine took more than $40,000 from pro-trans hospitals. Because that's why hospitals are interested in this. This is why hospitals are advocating for this. Not all hospitals. But you do have a good many pro-trans hospitals. Because it's an income generator. So the Federalist Papers reported, quote, a review of donations from 2018 to 2023 reveals that the governor received a total of $40,300 from the Ohio Children's Hospital Association, Cincinnati Children's Nationwide Children's Hospital, and ProMedica Children's Hospital. All right. So that Ohio Children's Hospital Association, that's the OCHA, and they donated $10,000 to the Mike DeWine and John Husted Transition Fund on December 28th of 2018, and another $10,000 on December 7th, 2022, according to the report. This transition fund allows candidates to spend donations for transition activities and inaugural celebrations, as outlined in Ohio's campaign finance handbook. So once again, my friend, if you want answers to perplexing questions, follow the money. And just for the record, the Cincinnati Children's and Nationwide Children's Hospitals offer gender-affirming care, including puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones, with no stated age limits for patients. That's the creepy part. No stated age limits for patients. You don't need me to tell you how immoral that is, how insane it is, how sick it is. And up to this point, I thought Governor DeWine of Ohio was a pretty good, solid guy. I'm sorry, I just can't get behind that. To the Comedy Corner with Mike James.
Watch my favorite, one of my favorite shows we started binge watching is Game of Thrones. Now, my wife had never seen Game of Thrones, so I'm like, this is perfect, we can watch this together. So we're watching it, and she said something that made me question our relationship. If you haven't seen it, there's an episode where this woman has three dragon eggs, okay? Three dragon eggs, and she walks into fire. Next morning, the fire's out, she's not burnt, the three dragon eggs have hatched, three dragons are walking around. My wife, who also is the mother of my children, looked at me with a straight face. I was like, man, that's fake. I said, really? What tipped you off? She was serious, too. She was like, how is she gonna walk in a fire and not get burned? I said, hold on, that's the part that messed you up? You didn't see these dragons walking around, so you need to pay attention. We have kids. I don't know. This is awesome, though, man. I am so glad to see everybody coming out. This is what we need right now, to come together, have a good time. If you watch TV, the news cut it off. Don't believe what they're saying. They're trying to make us feel so divided. We're not that divided. If we're sitting here right now having a good time laughing, if we can laugh together, we can live together. All right? So, because the media is like that, though. The media is like that. They try to have you believe in stuff you shouldn't believe, right? They try to have you believing you should be scared of somebody like me if you see me walking towards you at night. Seriously, 6'5" black man, you should be scared because I might rob you. Truth is, I'm scared of spiders, so. Can't be a criminal with arachnophobia, I don't know. Like, if I got a gun and you got a daddy long legs, you win. I am scared of spiders, man. I'm scared of spiders. I'm scared of heights. That freaks people out. I know. I get it. I see how y'all looking at me. Because I'm tall, you know. I don't know what that is. People think when you're tall, you shouldn't be scared of anything. You know? I'm scared of heights. People coming to me, oh, man, you scared of heights? How can you be scared of heights? You're so tall. I'm like, well, because gravity doesn't care. I don't know. Yeah, that's ridiculous. Like, you act like if I'm hanging from a building, somebody can be like, oh no, that guy's about to fall. Get help. Wait, hold on. Oh, he's 6'5". He's okay.
Make it a wonderful Wednesday. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's Bombastic Blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And you'd be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.